Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
So I'm joined today by Robin Warren. Robin is the founder of Corello, a suite of add-on products and what are they called? Boosters? Power-ups.
Power-ups,
Trello.
Yeah.
For Trello. So Robin, we've met half a dozen times now, I think, at different MicroConf events and whatnot. How are things going?
Yeah, going good. Not going too bad at all, really. Yeah, business has been hit by everything that's been going on, but on the flip side of that, I don't know if more people working remote is going to see a bit of an uptick. So It's a bit hard to sort of pull it all apart at the moment. But during the sort of fear stage, I got a lot of people, obviously the FDs popped in and said, is there anything you can cut? And you get sort of a bit of a jump in people cutting in. But yeah, also launched a new power-up recently, which we've been working on for about a year. And that's sort of a team of three of us. So normally two people full-time on it, and then sort of other people sort of dropping in and out. But yeah, to give a bit of context on that, I was sort of saying to this guys when we launched, the first version of Corello took me 6 weeks as one person to get ready, get launched. The next product I built called Time and List for Trello took me about 3 months, and then probably a month after that to sort of properly get the product market fit. And this is like over 2 man-years before we got it out the door, which 2 man-years of work was not a big deal at my last company I worked at, but is a big deal for me as a solo, you know, a sort of small firm anyway, bootstrapper. So that was kind of, it was exciting to get that out the door. And it was like a lot of stuff that was different in that sort of second product kind of phase. Yeah.
So I think there's a lot, this isn't how I anticipated the conversation to go, but I think there's a lot to that like, at the beginning, you don't have the confidence to spend that amount of time, or you were probably like savvy enough to say like, I can't spend that amount of time. I have to go. And I know like from some of your story, like you had quit your job or whatever, so you had to get this going. But some people want to sit in their basement and code for a year, but hopefully like all of the, you know, lean startup stuff that we've all heard and gotten beat into our brains tells us not to do that. But then like at where you are, you have the confidence maybe to be able to devote that time? I don't know.
Yeah, I'd say like, so yeah, definitely early days you want to move fast. And I did one of those sitting in the basement coding for a year kind of things. And I think everyone, as much as you read about it, you still, or at least me anyway, I have to learn for myself. So, but you get burnt once, don't you? You spend all this time, you miss a load of like weekends hanging out with your friends and stuff. And then you launch it and there's just crickets and you realize you just wasted all your time. And you think, I'm not doing that ever again. And then you start working like a weekend and launch something, you know, and sort of trying to get talk to people and get feedback. But yeah, this time around, it was a mix of things. There was, it's the resources that were available for one. So I could spend more time on it because, yeah, I'm not watching the bank balance tick down every single month. Although we were running a little bit of a loss last year with the people that I hired to work on this, but a tiny loss and quite a lot of cash in the bank. So I had the freedom to sort of say we can invest the time in this. I had the confidence to know that when we launched it, it was going to work because I had people asking me for this. So the Corello, the original product, is dashboards for agile teams. And this is a more general purpose reporting. So I, as you can imagine, I get a bunch of people sign up for Corello and they're like, what's this 90% of the product about? That's just agile stuff. What's going on there? I just like this one chart here, but can I do it like this, like that, this other way? So we took that 10% of the product and we just did a big version of that basically for all those people. So I was confident that people were going to buy it. So that gate took the pressure off a bit and you could say, okay, we can spend a year on this and get it right. But yeah, a lot of it is just about having the resources, I think, to be able to put the effort in to get things right first time round as well, I guess. Yeah, so, you know, a lot more like user testing and getting... We've got like a fancy deployment process where I just click a button and it happens rather than all the old ones where I sit there, build it, deploy it, realize I put it on the wrong one, apologize to the customers who get in touch because they're sort of on running two different versions of the code at the same time, etc. You know, it's like, so I pay a guy to just do 3 months, get like a really awesome deployment process going. And it's like,
yeah,
when you're just starting out, you're not going to pay a guy to do that. You're just going to do whatever works and then move on to the next problem, right? So...
Yeah, it's funny. So we're going to be embarking on. We just finished a part-time developer, but like 3 months of work on a feature, and we just deployed it last week. And we're about to embark on probably one of our full-time developers for several months on another feature. And it's terrifying. It's terrifying for me. I mean, we're only two developers. And so to take one person out of the game for, you know, what could be a couple months is really scary. Because, like, even, like you're saying, you have a lot of, like, confidence and knowledge from customers, and they're asking for this stuff, like, and we have a decent amount of that, but some of it still is just, like, in my head, I think, like, this is what we need to build.
Yeah, maybe I was overconfident.
And I could be wrong.
I mean, yeah, time still needs to tell on whether I was right to gamble quite so much on that. But
so what is, like, two developers, what percentage of your kind of development power is that? Is that half or
so
a quarter or what?
That is, so we got three of us at the moment, and I guess I'm at times, in theory, should be about 50% development, but a lot of the time, the last several months, I've been 100% development, because I, like, just today caught up on all my stats for the last 5 months that I've not been updating, and all the stuff I've not been doing, because I've been sort of head down on this. And then I've got another developer who's part-time. So,
okay,
yeah, two full-time developers is the vast majority of the team, basically.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I had did have three developers briefly last year, but then one of them left to go and build his own product. But it's three guys who work together. So, and I've worked with them for quite a while. So it's like, well, given what I'm doing, I can't really stand in your way and say, I don't want you going and building your own product, because I keep on preaching how great it is every day. But, you know, and I know he's still available there to help out and answer questions and fix bugs if he's needed. So
that's cool. And where are your developers located? Are they local with you in the UK, or?
One is in the UK, two, and the other one in Poland, the other two, as it was last year in Poland, yeah. And then sysadmin guy in South Africa. So not too diverse time zone-wise, so we can all get on and have a chat. So we have like a chat once a week on Hangouts, and then the rest of the time it's just on Slack, say what you're doing.
Yeah, we have a similar thing. We have an all-hands team meeting Monday, and then we have, you know, kind of regular, I mean, kind of all the time in Slack, just like everybody, I think.
Yeah, we were daily for a long time. We sort of had a chat every lunchtime-ish, but it just got too much, and it meant I could never go out for like a long lunch if I wanted to. I sort of this pressure to get back to the office.
Yeah.
And going once a week made it a lot more improved. We spent a lot more time just chatting about like, what you do on the weekend, what's going on over there, been out of the house recently. Whereas before, I think it was all business. So we're sort of actually getting a bit more team bonding, I guess, going on.
That's cool.
How do you
balance the the obvious benefit of like a platform that you work on and the maybe risk that inherently has?
Yeah. I sort of bounce it by sometimes just being really, really happy that I can launch a product and I've just got a free marketing channel that it goes through. And I've got relationships with people there, so I can sometimes get a bit of help with that. And then I just panic occasionally when I see them do something like, oh, they're going to replicate my business and then I'll be gone. And then 24 hours later, I've calmed down and look at what's in there. So recently Atlassian's been doing a few more things that are similar to Corello, a little bit of reporting and stuff like that. But so you panic at first, but then you think, well, anyone could have just moved to Jira and got that level of reporting anyway. And I've got a lot of competition in there now that are doing similar reporting to me, and that's not really affected anything. So it's just it's another competitor. I was very blasé about it for a long time because Trello had very openly not courted the developer market, and I was very openly courting the developer market. So it was pretty clear they weren't going to try and replicate what I was doing because it's the exact opposite of what they're trying to do. They might do what I was doing, but they would call it something different. You know, like they have to call it power-ups instead of add-ons and stuff like that. They'd call all the charts something different that would mean nothing to developers and agile teams.
Yeah.
So I'd be safe in that way. But the, but in general, I mean, like being bought by Atlassian, I guess, makes it a bit more of a concern. But then also Atlassian are very good with their platforms, and I think pushed Trello at that time to be like, you know, you should invest in the platform and make this a real thing. So I look at it as a free marketing channel, and I accept that there is some risk there. And I think you've got to look at what you're building sometimes and think, well, I could do that, but it's a fairly obvious feature for them to add that would be fairly easy for them to add that would be better than anything that I can do with their, obviously they've got deeper integrations they can do than I can do. And you think, well, yeah, that's probably not worth even 3 months of my time because 6 months, a year, 2 years time, they're obviously going to get rid of that. The reporting is an interesting one because they've tried to build that a couple of years ago. They sort of put on their forums that they were looking to build it, and then that sort of effort dried up. So I was like, okay, I guess I'll go and build that myself then. There's still a fear that they'll do something, but I think if I've got a good solution in there, that's less pressure on them to do something. So yeah.
Yeah, I think about that some with like our WordPress plugin. Like, you know, WordPress could just build our plugin or fork it and stick it into WordPress core, and that would be a bummer. But I still think we have a decent, like, and I think this is the thing, is like, even with a platform to try to make your business defensible and build a moat around it and unique things that you do that they can't replicate. I don't know what the answer for that is for us, but I think that's how I try to approach it, is like, yeah, because I agree, like, being in the WordPress repository is a great marketing channel for us. And it's a really nice, like, value for our customers. Like,
yeah,
they can podcast from WordPress and it's great and all this kind of stuff. But it is like a really good marketing channel too. And I think without it, we would have struggled to get the traction we have. But then the risk is that they could just duplicate it basically someday. And I don't know.
But it's how deep would they go is the thing. I think this is it. If you've got something that's extremely shallow, then yeah, you know, it's basically could become a commodity, then that's a risk. But there's often, as you know, with any product, you can put something really trivial out there and then you're working on it for the next 5 years to add all the stuff that bells and whistles that people want. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, whatever they do, unless that's actually their business, they're probably not going to do as good a job as you do. And you can still get a lot of the serious people coming to you.
Yeah.
I think it's overblown sometimes, the platform risk, in sort of bootstrapping circles. It's some people would completely swear off it at all. I think it's after the sort of Twitter debacle, really, was like a decade ago, was it, I guess, when they just completely pulled the rug out from everyone, and that sort of burnt a lot of people's opinion of these sort of platforms. But I think if you've got a company that is generally behaving in a sane way, then you can take a calculated risk with it, and it's a free marketing channel. I mean, what's not, if you're a developer like I am, what's not to like about a free marketing channel that you don't have to do anything particularly clever to operate, you know?
So. Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, it is, especially for developers, that is the biggest problem. And even in, like, within Tinyseed, I mean, we see most of the discussions we have in Tinyseed are about marketing. Both with a new batch that just came in and with ours, is just like sales, marketing, pricing, a little bit of team, very little product. So I think it's in some respects, the easiest product is the easiest to get right. Marketing is, it's like never ending, you know, like you just can never, you're never done marketing.
Well, in finding time for it and resources for it as well, that first time round when you're heavily resource constrained, you can't just go and throw cash at it. And finding time for it whilst you're still under a lot of product pressure, you know, you did a demo to someone on Friday. They said, yeah, they'll sign up, but he needs X, Y, and Z. So you spend the next week building X, Y, and Z, but then you don't do any more marketing or anything like that, or run any more experiments. The first year of Corello, there was no real directory for Trello. That was only launched after I'd been going about sort of 12 months. And that was a turning point for me, because I was up to about $1,000 a month at that point. But I've been trying to do the 50-50 marketing and product, but it was probably more like 90-10 or 80-20, you know? And I found some ways that were kind of working, but it was a struggle. Yeah. And a struggle there as well. I mean, that's if you're building on a platform and they don't effectively do some marketing for you, it's quite tricky, because then you've got this Venn diagram of people on the platform you're building on top of and who have your problem that you're solving. And it's often easy to market to one or the other, but to hone it down to just that niche is actually quite tricky. So
I do think it is the responsibility and like to the advantage of the platform to market the marketplace or the add-ons too, because the whole reason they have a platform or a marketplace and add-ons and stuff is because they don't want to build everything. And so like when you go build this thing for 10% of the market, they should say, thank God, you know, come in here, you know, users, and here's the product that solves all your agile needs. And they don't have to do anything. And they already have access to all those customers. So yeah, I agree. It's, and for that reason, they should treat developers to like the add-on developers to their platform well, because you really are providing a service that they've chosen not to invest in.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and a Trello and Atlassian, I think, sort of tick the boxes there, basically. So
you have like a really mature product, like with the original Corello. How do you approach the balance of, this is a question I ask everybody, I feel like we just don't have it. It is like, how do you approach the balance of features and improvements of what's already there? And I would put bugs into to that latter category, like from a development resource perspective.
We've not done a lot of new stuff to it for quite a while now. Last year, we put a lot of effort into a bit of a redesign, really improved the look of it, and we added a few feature improvements there that I knew people were waiting on. I don't get people really hounding me for stuff at the moment. There's one or two gaps I would like to resolve between us and some competitors. But again, I'm not really getting people coming and saying, why haven't you got this? Even existing users coming and saying, why haven't you got this? So I think that's how I balance it, really, is that if people are asking for something, then and it makes sense, then we would probably look to try and make time for it. But for the most part, I think we try and just focus on the entire company on like one thing, really. I say the entire company on one thing. We're working on two things at the moment. I worked on two things last year. But I try and focus on... So it was the redesign was the focus for Corello last year. And once that was done, we moved the developer we've been doing that onto Blue Cat, which is a new reporting one. And everything's just really on Blue Cat at the moment. And anything that comes up for Corello, I just park. We've got a feature that was half done last year that I put out on beta to one customer who'd been asking for it. And it seemed like a quickie. Turned out to be a bit bigger than a quickie. But ultimately, they've not come back to me with a lot of feedback. I've not chased them. And I'm like, well, we'll just leave that hanging there then, which feels bad because I keep on seeing it on my to-do list every now and then. Oh, you really should do this with, you know, this new feature. But I'm okay with that because we really need to push Blue Cat forward. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I think my thing is like pick what you're doing, focus on that. And then when that's done, come up for air and work out what you're going to focus on next. And don't really worry too much about like going back and forth, this, that, and the other. And I mean, the bugs aren't really an issue with Corello because it's fairly solid now, you know. Occasionally something will come up. And I'll normally handle that myself because I'll be doing the customer support anyway. I'll let the guys keep on working on the stuff that really matters, basically. Yeah, what do you do then that's not working?
No, I don't know if it's working or not. I just... I challenge myself and we challenge ourselves internally when we talk like our development meetings of like, is this the right way to think about how we spend our time and how do you even track all of this? You know, like a bug comes in, like how do you know when it's a serious bug? How do you know when it gets elevated? And I think we have a decent way we do that, but we don't, and we just started talking about this, we don't focus on the same thing for both of our developers. They always are working on different things. And it always kind of seems like one of them is working on, you know, bugs or, you know, refactoring, and one is working on a feature. Just, you know, kind of how it works.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's really healthy because then one is kind of available and one I know, like, don't bug him. He's in deep work. Like,
yeah.
Only if it's a real emergency. And that, like, for me, that's really healthy because I'm always wanting to talk product with those guys, and I know I have to like leave them alone, but to know that I have one of them I can talk to about, hey, what do you think about this, or hey, you know, give me your thoughts on this mock-up or whatever. Is pretty healthy, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, my thing is on the Blue Cat stuff, I was doing some of the back end work, which is where I was gonna say better. It's not better than them, but better than I am at front end work, if you know what I mean. Okay. I'll fill in the gaps there. And then there was a load of issues with the data loading. So we had a load of testing, sort of code quality issues, mostly my stuff. And the testing was on me as well. So the fact that didn't work out was a mistake I made. So I cost us a bunch of time there. But generally, I was the one doing the testing and then going and fixing the bugs. And I was like, you focus on moving, you know, this is the next feature we need in, and then this is the next one. And I was running a beta process at the time, so it's like, okay, you guys work on this so that I can do the next set of beta, you know, invites on Friday or the next week or something, and I'll just find and fix bugs, basically, so that they weren't changing context all the time, because that is a real quick way to slow developers down, is just to have them keep on chopping and changing. So definitely, if there's one who is handling the interrupts for a while and one who is just head down, focus on something, I think that's a great way to do it, really. Yeah, and I've got my designer developer who I can go and bug about crazy ideas I've had, and he doesn't mind that too much. I do it on a Friday before the weekend, so we can not distract him from his work, just distract him from his
chew
family
on it
life.
Over the weekend. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you, so like with coronavirus, you know, obviously, like, you know, you mentioned churn was up for a bit, and now maybe the long term of more people working from home could be kind of beneficial to you guys. How do you view, like, I don't want to say like forecasting because that's too fancy, I think, but like cash flow management and kind of looking ahead to, it's like the near or medium term future in terms of like how you're managing the business and cash flow and things like that.
Yeah. So that was, we planned to launch Blue Cat in January, but then because of this sort of testing issues that were my fault, it ended up dragging on until about March, I think, we finally got it out.
Just in time,
with
right?
All the, well, exactly. And with all that coming along, it was like, okay, we really need to get this out the door and try and get some money out of it. Because we were losing money at that point. Not a lot, but we were losing money every month. So that went out the door. We had cash in the bank for the business to be safe, even if that didn't make any money, which would be unlikely. But we then sort of changed tack a little bit from the plan, which had been to sort of focus on the three products we had, mainly just focus on Corello and build up a load of more agile, sort of free sort of lead generation kind of products around that and improve the sort of core there, keep on building Blue Cat out. And one of those projects was going to be doing the website for Corello. But the developer who's doing that came to me and said, I think we should probably not do that. Let's go and build some other products that would make money. Because we'd sort of talked about a load of different products we could do. And he'd been building out a lot of reusable front-end code. With Blue Cat, I'd done a lot of the back-end, so it was reusable. And we could sort of port it around and very quickly sort of spin up new power-ups. It's like, well, yeah, actually, we've got all this stuff there now. So I drew up a load of plans. And we kind of went into it like, let's spend 3 months build another one, two, maybe three paid power-ups and see if we can't get the revenue up. Because the business will be fine now and we could sort of coast as we are. I would rather we made like some more money so I could get paid a bit more maybe, because it's still,
always, yep,
you know, several years in and still sort of on subsistence wages basically, you know, because you're plowing it back into the company. But what I'm thinking is not the immediate impact of the coronavirus stuff, but kind of, you know, 6 months, a year down the line, there's going to be a huge economic impact, I would think, from this. And that is what I want to get ahead of at the moment, you know? It's like, get us profitable again. So if there's a downturn, we go down to not profitable rather than unprofitable, if you know what I mean. Yeah, I'm trying to sit on cash in the bank as much as we got it. I was looking at prepaying for AWS servers, but they make it really, really complicated. It's like, they're telling me to spend 12 grand up front to save 8 grand over 12 months. On a 12-month contract. I'm not sure if the math really works there. But it's like every day that I have time, I go in, I think I should just go in and pay for this now because we've got the money there. Then I look at it and there's like three different things you can buy. But yeah, so that's it. I'm trying to not take on any debt, anything like that. At one point I was like, oh, I could hire another developer and build a load of products really fast because, you know, I knew another guy who was available at the moment. But then that sort of moment passed and I thought, no, like some cash in the bank right now cash in the bank in 6 months' time will be highly valuable, I think. And let's not rush into that. So yeah, that's it really, I think. How about you?
Yeah, kind of similar. Like we're one of the few companies I think has overall been like positively impacted by coronavirus. Like more people are podcasting. And so that's good. We just had our best month ever by like 50%. So, and wow, that kind of like gives me some like false confidence maybe in the short term, you know, to say like, everything's great. Let, you know, it's up and to the right and, you know, we still have a bunch of money left over from Tiny Seed. Let's go, you know, hire more people or do whatever. And, you know, buying ads doesn't make sense right now. Like ads are just crazy right now. And so I'm tempted to reinvest in the business while it's good and while the market trend is going in that direction. But at the same time, like the conservative voice in my head is saying, like, you're not losing anything by not spending that money. You know, like there's nothing will happen if I don't spend that money.
Yeah. And I don't think there's a rush to, you know, the phase we're in at the moment is the very start of it, isn't it, really? And
I think so,
making a decision on the current situation would be making a decision on something that's probably going to change in 3 weeks' time. But
I do think here in like the beginning of May, the worst for us like socially is over, I think. You know, socially and from a, you know, health perspective, I think the worst of the numbers are over for the near term. And like, yeah, we're here in France. We're going to open up next week. I heard you guys maybe another couple of weeks in the UK. And but then I do think there's a very good chance there'll be a resurgence in the fall. But even if not, like, the number of companies that are getting their ass kicked right now is that economic downturn that you're talking about, that will come in 6 months when all of the shit kind of flushes through the system.
Yeah.
And people realize like their jobs are just not there anymore, right? Like they've been downsized. People are working remotely, so that office doesn't need to be rented anymore. And the admins and the front desk aren't needed because the office just doesn't exist and all this stuff. Like, I think the number of levels of that we'll see is what will cause the downturn, because like, we want to go out and like go to restaurants and buy stuff and, you know, take trips and all this, and nobody can right now. So that's like artificially suppressing the economy, I think. But I think longer term, the part that will never come back is some of this like brick and mortar old school business stuff that people just realize is unnecessary, because a lot of businesses have been forced to pivot into this world that you and I live in. And realize that it doesn't suck.
Yeah. I chatted a few people recently. I'm interested to see what the world is that comes out on the other side. And like, you know, the bits everyone talks about, like, you know, is everyone going to start working from home all the time and get rid of their offices? And it's like, but then it's also like, will people even go to shops? You know what I mean? In September, October, pre a vaccine, is somebody going to want to go to a shop and try on a pair of jeans that they don't know how many other people have tried on and things like this? You know, it's like the companies now that are able to restart, you think, but actually there's not the interest there. Or, you know, cafes and restaurants, like you say, there's, you know, I'm really missing my favorite cafe here where I would go and sit and do a lot of my thinking. And it's like, it's a bit like going into Cheers, you know, the old TV show. It's
just, yeah.
The guy in there is really chatty. You can go in like with a book or like business book or something, get the piss taken out of you for reading the business book by all the old folk in there and everything. And people are just chatting. You can read, think, and then you can get joined in some conversation about what you think of some politician or something, or what's going on locally, some piece of graffiti. But whether he will come back or not, I don't know. I mean, he runs pretty lean. He's run for a long time, and he'll sort of say about all the businesses he's seen start up and close down on the street. But it's a tiny little cafe. He's got no outdoor space. You know, can he be filled up? And if he's not filled up, can he afford to pay the rent or anything? So, and it takes a while for that filter through to hit us, doesn't it? But it does at some point. You know, that guy stops spending money somewhere else. They cut. So, that's what I want to be ready to weather. And if in a year's time that doesn't come and I got a lot of cash in the bank, then that's not going to be a bad problem to have, right? You know?
Yeah, I have to say one of the best things about joining Tiny Seed, the best part was definitely like the network and the people that we have access to. The second best thing is not worrying about money. Like, it's really nice not to have to worry about know, paying rent or being able to pay the team or anything like that. And I never, ever, ever want to get there, because I don't deal well with stress. And so like that amount of stress is like, I would be in a really bad spot.
Yeah. We got down to my, like, sort of figure I don't like going under in the bank a few weeks back, but it was mostly because I paid dividends out for last year, so I could pay all of that money back as a director's loan into the business, and the bank account would stop stressing me out. But that did stress me out for a couple weeks, along with everything else that's going on. It's hard to sort of pick it all apart. And I I don't know about you, I'm sort of trying to work about 4 hours a day at the moment, because they're trying to sort of help out with the kids and stuff like that quite a lot as well, which often isn't enough time to get everything done. But then there's no more time in the day. So that's the way it is. So it's getting a bit sort of stressed out with that. But like I say, it was a bit artificial, because I could have just not paid those dividends out, or I could have kept them in the bank as a director's loan. And ultimately, all the forecasts I've got are that amount of money creeping upwards again over the year. Which
good. That's awesome.
Fairly conservative estimate. Yeah.
You know, one thing I think about is like, we're in a, I think you are too, like in a position to be a remote team, you know, digital team helping remote digital teams. And that's really cool.
Yeah.
And I try to think how we can continue to be in the best possible position there. Cause like for the next year anything that's the opposite is going to get hurt. And so how can we continue to be the best in best position for like, yeah, helping everybody that's not in a physical location or having to deal with social distancing and all this kind of stuff. And yeah. I don't know the answer for us or for anybody else, but that's like from a strategy perspective, like the thing I keep thinking about is like, what are we doing to help people online and be successful? Because a lot of the other parts of their lives are screwed up.
Yeah. I mean, one thing with being a remote business already was there was hardly any impact at all when the lockdown was announced, because one of my guys works from home anyway. The other one works from home most of the time, so he just went and got his big monitor from work and he was actually better set up.
Yeah.
I luckily ordered a standing desk for my place. So we haven't got a spare room here for me to work in, so I work in my daughter's bedroom using a standing desk on her bookcase. So it took a few weeks to get used to standing up all day long. And we took the chair out of her room as well, because we put like a sort of her big, like proper single bed in there now. So I haven't even got anywhere I can sit down in a day if I do want to take a load off my legs.
Oh, that's rough. Is it hard? Because I stand about a third of the time. I sit the rest. Yeah, because my desk goes, it's like a, can go up and down.
Is
it hard to stand up all day?
It was getting to me a bit. It was also me and my wife were working out quite a lot, because it's like the only thing you can do to get a break for yourself and like do something different, right?
Do you do PE with Joe?
I don't do PE with Joe. We tried doing it with my kids. They didn't really get on with it. They're a bit little. They're only 5 and 2. So we've started doing one that my personal trainer put up on YouTube, which is great because they've got 2 kids the same age. So like you're there trying to do like burpees or something, and my like littlest one is climbing over my back, and you look up and Lucy on the video has got her daughter climbing on her back as well. So it's just like the same. And the kids get a bit more involved when there's like other kids on the screen. So we've been doing that recently, and that's been good to sort of start the day for them as well. But yeah, I normally go out for a run, or I still see my personal trainer twice a week over video. And then I was doing like weights in the afternoon. But so it's like go out, run 5K, stand up for 4 hours, then go and lift a load of weights in the garage. And then at the end of the week, I was be wondering why my legs were hurting so much. So
yeah,
I was slowing down on the exercise a little bit. But yeah, you get used to it. I really noticed the standing at first, and now I'm okay with it. And like I say, it's only sort of 4, maybe 5 hours a day.
The way I've done it for a while is I'll leave the desk standing, and then like I have my MacBook, and then I just plug it into an external monitor. And so I can take the laptop and go like into living room or upstairs to our room. We have a, you know, big chair, and I can sit there and do email just on the laptop when I want to sit down. And so I think that's how I'm going to try to do it. Cause I do find like my back never hurts if I'm standing up for part of the day, but like today I sat down all day and like my back just gets tight. So I think standing is for me but then my back hurts when I'm standing up too long. So like, I'm an old fuddy-duddy.
I am quite liking it, though. I mean, sort of chatting to my wife about things that we would keep after this. I think it's quite interesting chatting to people about that, because people have had a load of enforced change, and then you actually discover some of it's kind of great. One best thing with the kids is not having to shout at them to get out the house every single day, you know, because it's always that like deadline to get out the house by 8:30 in the morning, and it just doesn't really matter now, does it?
No,
Top Wings finishes on TV, go and do the bit of exercise, and then, you know, as long as they're sort of dressed and got their head on, it's kind of fine. So,
have they canceled school in the UK, like, for the rest of the year?
Not yet. They keep on reviewing it every 3 weeks. The rumors are that they'll let the last year of primary school go back soon, just so that they're ready for the transition up. Yep. But I've heard that they'll let like the younger kids go back first. You can sort of argue it every way, basically. But I'm quite liking working from home. And my office is only 15 minutes, 10 minutes walk from my house anyway. But it just gives me so much more time. Even like, you know, I was really happy when I started working from home when I started the business, because I got rid of an hour and a half commute in each direction. And I was like, you know, 2-3 hours a day where I can actually like work, whereas before I was just walking around and sitting on a train.
Yeah.
And now it's like 30 minutes a day where I can go a workout in the garage with that time, you know? Like, and it just makes this, you know, you're a bit more living. Yeah, there's like work-life balance, work and life kind of blend together a bit more, you know, take a break from work and I go and like knead my dough for because obviously you've got to take up making bread, haven't you, whilst you're in lockdown. You know, you can just get a bit more involved in like the ebb and flow of family life, basically. It's quite nice.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've been working more. I track my time with what the hell is this called? Rescue Time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been working more, like an hour a day more on average now than I did before. But at the same time, yeah, I basically work in the morning for about an hour, hour and a half maybe. Email, catch up with the team, and then we do PE with Joe. PE with Joe, for those non-Europeans, is this guy in the UK that has like this huge YouTube following. He does, you know, 30-minute interval kind of thing, plyometrics every day during the week. We do it with our family. And then pretty much right into lunch, like get lunch ready, blah, blah, blah. And then like 1 to 6 or 7 I work in the afternoon or in the evening.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's weird. Like I work right up until dinner, all the way through the afternoon, basically, and basically almost nothing in the morning.
Yeah. Your kids are a bit older and you're in France, aren't you? So you eat at a more civilized hour, whereas we eat at 5 o'clock. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's like bath time, bedtime. And then, yeah, I came straight on here 7:30 and I don't think they were still quite down upstairs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, I could fit a bit more work in the evenings, but then I find having been at home all day, you know, me and my wife then want to have an evening. So
yeah.
Yeah. But it is tricky sometimes. Like I say, there's weeks when I've got more to do than I've got time to do it in. But the key for me is not doing too much programming. And I think, so that's one thing. I think this is going to force me to optimize the business and optimize my time a little bit, just because there's less of my time. So I'll finally give up on doing all the coding that really I'm probably not best place to do anyway, and just accept that it'll get done a day or two later because someone else will pick it up. Probably hire a customer support person, because that's the one thing I have to do every day at the moment. And it's one thing that takes me away from the sort of deep work I want to focus on each day. And if you've only got 4 or 5 hours in a day, you want to focus on the really important stuff rather than telling someone how the pricing works or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So are you doing user testing on your new features then?
No.
That is one of the things that we changed with Blue Cat, and that was probably cost us, I don't know, 3 months on one sort of key part of it. So we did user testing on the onboarding flow. And a big part of the onboarding flow is after they've actually technically onboarded and they add their first chart to a report, basically. So we just want to make sure they can get all the way through. Because if you can add one chart to a report, you've then seen the entire wizard to add charts. You know what's in there. And you can think, okay, I can go and add this now, add that now. And you've seen something work and seen a little pie chart or something, you know, and you're happy. So we did a lot of user testing just on that wizard. And I was sort of looking at the numbers earlier. So I think I only went through 10 people. It was probably 2 or 3 a week, or every couple of weeks, whenever we had another version ready to go. So I think when I saw you at MicroConf Europe last year, we'd just done the first round of testing, and that was one of the things that I had to sort of sit down and write up that weekend so that the guys could start working on it the next week, so that I could do another, get another 2 people in the end of the next week once I'd sort of put the changes in. But that was super valuable. So, you know, got on 30-minute, 45-minute call, videoed it, made my notes, sent the video to the guys so they could watch it as well, make their notes, compare notes, come up with a bunch of theories about we could change this, we could change that. Then you pick whatever seems to be the highest, biggest win, do that, and then watch the next ones. And sometimes the next one, something you thought was a problem in the last two doesn't come up, so you're like, oh, well, actually, that was just those 2 people didn't get it.
Yeah,
it's fine. Yep. Or, you know, the same thing comes up again, so that pumps up to the top. But that has meant we've had to do 0 changes in that wizard now. It's just out there. It's working. I've not had people getting in touch saying, you know, why can't I see my charts? Or why is this showing? Or why isn't that showing? You know, because I had all of those questions during that beta process. And that was one of the benefits of having a team, because I've got one guy who's sort of designer/developer, and he was pushing me to do that, which I'm one of these people who has always talked about usability testing, but has never actually done it. Sort of like 14-year-olds with sex, I guess. And he sort of pushed me to like actually go and do it. And it was good. But that's, you know, one of the reasons that it was like a 1-year project rather than a, you know, a 6-month project, was because we spent probably 3 months usability testing and refining that whilst we were working on other things. But there's a natural, you know, it takes you a week from getting the feedback to make the change. Put it in, so that just sort of stretches it out.
And these are like people on an early access list, or you have people on beta that you can invite in, onesie twosie?
Yeah, exactly. So I had I had a beta list of customers. So I set up a type form, which posted the card into Trello. And then I'd email everyone who signed up and sort of flagged them by what features they wanted. And as we had a feature ready, it was like, okay, send an email out. Crickets back from a load of them. But then you get the two who are really, really interested, and they come in and you go through it with them. And then, you know, you're just constantly getting feedback from them all the way through then.
We just enabled like beta testing for our plugin, but we don't have any kind of feature flag or beta user functionality in the web app yet. We did just start working with like a designer and UX person for this feature we just launched for Castos Productions. And it was really helpful because, it took longer because he and I worked together for a month to get, you know, the wireframes ready. But then the developer just built it, and it was 95% right the first time, as opposed to when I just in words describe really poorly what I want. It's about 50% right the first time the developers come back. I think working with a designer UX person that you can talk to, they can mock it up, you can click around the mockups and say, this is totally wrong. They can go change it in Figma really easier than in code.
Absolutely. And then when you get to that endpoint as well, it's still designed rather than the first version was designed, and then you've cobbled together the final 50% as you've sort of hacked it around, and it ends up looking a bit of a Frankenstein. But I mean, that's one thing. Blue Cat, with having a designer on board, is the first product I've launched that actually looks designed, because I always just got like a Bootstrap theme, and it just looked like a Bootstrap theme, you know? I was trying to think what it was that's different about it. It's not just... because they can look good, a Bootstrap theme, you know, and all that, but it's just that it doesn't look like everything else out there. It's like, oh, these guys had a designer do this, you know? But yeah, that was good. That was more work. I don't know. It was maybe less work than I thought it was going to be, but it was still a significant amount of work just to get that going, because you've got to set up calls with people, and, you know, that's a whole afternoon gone then of, like, video and make the notes and everything. But looking back on it, that would have made the last few weeks really, really painful, when I was trying to work 5 hours a day and fix bugs and under the cost to add features, and we're having to go back and redesign the entire wizard. But again, you know, if it was the first time around, we would have just launched 3 months earlier and then fixed it live, basically. So I don't know if I can say for sure that one is the right way to go and one's the wrong way to go, but when you haven't got any money and you're just trying to get off the ground, the right way to go is the one that gets you out the door faster. And then just talk to everyone, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, we've just started doing a pretty formal, I mean, for a two-person development team, pull request system. So I mean, we've been using GitHub and all that forever, but now basically a pull request has to be reviewed before it gets merged and deployed, even a staging. Yep. And so that, for us, that's like that first step on the like quality review usability ladder, is like, we ship much better code the first time now. But I think we only are comfortable with that. And it takes at least an extra 2 days, you know, even for like a small feature. Cause you know, somebody has to review it, and then they send it back to the developer fixes it, sends it back, and then has to be reviewed again. And like, but in terms of bugs, I guess, like we don't ship bugs nearly as much.
And
with pull requests and
Everyone's more aware of each other's code as well.
Yeah.
So your bus factor's down now, because somebody can step in and fix someone else's code because they've seen it. And they're hopefully having discussions around like, I prefer it if you structure it like this. You know, it makes it a bit more readable. So people are coming together maybe on what is a nice readable way to write their code. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. But they're very esoteric, like, artist now. It's hilarious to I read the pull request reviews and I'm like, you guys, it's code.
Yeah, you develop a definite taste for wanting it to be a certain way, I think, because you can then stop thinking about it, if you know what I mean. It's like,
yeah,
your brain assumes certain things are going to appear in certain structures, and if somebody does it in a different structure, then suddenly you've really got to pay attention to what's going on in there, rather than just ignore that and look at the actual interesting bit in the middle.
Yeah.
That sounds good, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. All right, man. Cool. GetCorello.com. And is Blue Cat on the same site then?
BlueCatReports.com.
Cool.
And timeinlist.com. But yeah, if anyone uses Trello and they need power-ups, go and have a look at the power-ups. And there's a reasonable chance you'll stumble over one in mine, probably about 4% of the mine awesome. At the moment.
So. Cool.
All right.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.